Well, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Ace Hotel for a very special live version of the Corner Store. Please make some noise for my incredible, illustrious host, the journalist Tara Mahadevan.
Thanks, and I guess you can applaud for Kevin, but you know
we're good.
You don't have to.
You don't have to. We're good. Tara, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. This is a great space.
Yes.
Thank you to Claire and everybody at the Ace Hotel for having us, for hosting us tonight.
Indeed.
You had a good day?
Yes. Today didn't feel like Monday, but...
No?
I don't know.
What'd you get into?
I don't know. Just grown-up shit.
Yeah. Oh, you said you had an adult.
I had to do my taxes.
You were adulting. Yeah, that's real.
No, I hate that word.
Oh, you do?
It's not a word.
Because it's ageist?
No, just stupid.
Fair.
Yeah.
That's fair. We have an incredible squad with us tonight. Just fresh out from what we're doing. Normally we record at WGN Radio. We're in a spaceship usually, and tonight we have a live audience at the Ace Hotel because we have an illustrious crew of writers in the building. The three editors of a brand new anthology called Black Girl Magic, the second edition of the Breakbeat Poet series on Haymarket Books. Just to go down the line to tell you who's in the building. First of all, they also just walked out of a reading
that they crushed
at the Poetry Foundation.
Yeah.
The shit was like more people at the Poetry Foundation than the Poetry Foundation knew what to do with. They like had a set of speakers in the library, and they were like, oh, fuck, what are we going to do with all these people? And I think maybe they were shook a little bit, and it was very fresh, and you all bodied. But just to go down the line, Mahogany Brown from Oakland originally, but via Brooklyn, New York. Make some noise for Mahogany Brown.
Yes.
From the Bay Area, Oakland, California, to be specific, Idrissa Simmons flew in this morning on a red eye to be here. Make some noise for Idrissa. And from the south side of Chicago, y'all, make some noise for Jamila Woods. So, y'all, before we begin, you know, we'd like to greet our Corner Store participants with some gifts. So we do have some special gifts for you all just out the box. Or out the bag, I should say. Here we go.
I'm so ready for this.
I wish they could see this on video.
These are like the best snacks he's ever selected.
I'm ready
selected.
For this. Because you can't see.
First of all,
announce that.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, for all of you, we have some Vintners sizzling hot crunchy curls. You could pass them down the line. Yeah, pass them down the line. I didn't bring some for y'all. Shit, come
on,
man.
I bought
some for our guests.
This was in somebody's poem.
Y'all could share if you wish.
This is in somebody's poem. Who had this in the poem?
Everybody from Chicago.
Oh, that was Iman, right?
Then you get to eat these. Can I open them?
Yeah, you know. Yeah,
we like sound effects. You can eat in the mic.
Love sound effects.
Okay.
Pass them around.
Come on, Diamond. Me and you, baby.
We also have some Little Debbie zebra cakes for y'all. You already know. So you can pass those down as well. Welcome to Chicago.
Okay.
Little Debbie.
Okay. People coming up, trying to take these snacks. Okay.
And then.
Don't give me that.
All right. There's a lot of demand for the crunchy curls and the zebra cakes. And per Mo's desire, we also have for each of you your own bottle of Prosecco. So.
You know me so well, brother.
Hey, look, we will literally get it popping. So.
It is ice cold.
All right.
Yo, this feel like I'm on a stoop somewhere
it's
right
an extra
now.
Extra snack. There's an extra. No, there's an extra something else. You got the wafers. Who are those for?
Oh yeah. And Jamila also requested some strawberry sugar wafers.
Oh, those is delicious.
Right. We can share them.
But y'all. Please feel free to pop anything you got to pop and share, pass around.
There's cups back there.
Imbibe
as
you wish. There are cups.
Oh, that's nice of y'all.
So
you're not gonna drink it straight from the bottle.
Oh, I was, but now that we got cups, I guess I'll.
You
but there
do
are other, two other bottles.
Yeah.
So you could just have them for yourself.
Whatever you wish.
Fucked up. This is gonna be the best interview ever.
You all, thank you so much for being here, and thank you for coming to Chicago to be a part of this incredible night. I don't know. Mo, maybe we could start with you. If you could maybe just tell us a little bit about where you... I know you're doing a lot right now.
I just put one.
You told me to eat this.
Idrissa, right. Why don't we start with you? If you could tell us a little about, you know, where you come from and maybe how you got involved in writing.
I told you that I did.
Yeah, it's hot.
I said don't do it.
It's hot.
No. It's in my hand. But I cleaned my hands.
Thank you, Avery R. Young.
She want them. I'm giving it to this baby.
Have you never had them before?
Come on, family.
Mo, is it your first time with hot chips?
This is my first time eating
with crunchy
chips
curls?
That weren't like a proper Cheeto.
Oh, yeah. No.
Proper right. as yeah, in yeah, 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 yeah. That's who made it. Not that they aren't good.
Right. Okay.
This is hot.
They are. They're yeah. They'll make your mouth perspire.
Chicago really just turned up over that moment.
In our feelings a little bit. In our feelings.
How are you mad at me over food that's not actually food? That's
well, listen. I mean,
that's
technically,
with some red.
It's the cornerstone of a lot of Chicago kids' morning diet. You know what I mean? So I know, which is. Yeah. Hey. Hey.
That was a good
I used
pop.
To bartend.
That was a good pop.
Well done. So, Idrissa, I'm sorry. Yo, so, Idrissa, where are you from? And maybe tell us a little bit about how you got involved in, you know, the literary world.
Yeah. First of all, thank you for having us. This is my first time in Chicago.
Hey.
First time. And it has been beautiful and wonderful. And I hope I can stay longer next time. This is literally 24 hours.
Okay.
First time away from the 10-month-old.
I know. Thank you for making that voyage.
Yes, and glad to be doing it with y'all. I'm originally from Brooklyn, New York.
Okay.
East New York, to be specific. Family is from Bed-Stuy, then East New York. Came to Brooklyn from Haiti in the 30s, 40s. So long roots in Brooklyn. My family moved to Vancouver, Canada when I was a kid. That's a long story in itself, how that move happened. But moved to Vancouver, grew up there. This anthology, this collection, really spoke to me in terms of what it means to speak to Black Girl Magic as a little Black girl who was growing up in a very isolated environment where I was one of the few Black girls and saw very few reflections of myself around other people. And I needed this anthology. I said at the reading tonight, I wish I had this at 12 to see different interpretations and visions of what it meant to be magic and a Black woman. Mm-hmm. So have been writing for a long time. Have been writing for most of my life. I'm a fiction writer. I discovered Octavia Butler in the public library one day. I was just struck by the cover of Wild Seed, fell in love with that book, and was like, what? Black women are writing this kind of stuff? So from that point on, I fell in love with speculative fiction and Afrofuturism, as well as poetry and other art forms. So I have been writing poetry and fiction and essays since about the age of 12, and have like journals fold up all over the all across cities at this point, between Brooklyn and Vancouver and now Oakland, that I've called home for the past 3 years. So, and came to this work. Mo and I got to know each other well in Brooklyn via Cave Canem, have written together, have workshopped together. And when she was brought on, she thought of me and my work. So that's how I came to this.
Cool. Thank you. And I mean, we'll, you know, I want to say, too, that there are a lot of contributors in the room who are in the
shout
book.
Out to them,
yeah,
yes.
And hopefully
can we get them to read,
yeah, hopefully we're going to invite them at the end if they wish to maybe read something from the book if they desire. And you know, and Idrissa, you know, one of the things I hope we can pick up is that idea of representation and maybe not seeing yourself in literature, and maybe that could be one of the things that we touch on later. Mo, you also traveled far to be here. Thank you.
Yes, sir.
Where are you from, and how did you get involved in writing?
Involved in writing?
Yeah.
I am from California, and I moved to Brooklyn 20 years ago. But I started writing in, I guess, middle school, but I didn't make it a real thing, I guess, until 1998. I was writing for a hip-hop magazine. I got an internship at XXL, moved to New York for the summer, or so I thought. I never went back. So my writing started in journalism for my love for hip hop. And then the poetry happened after the editing process in journalism that really required me to be quiet and to not go against the grain, not talk about the misogyny, not talk about the abuse that was happening and the threats that happened. And that's when I came back to poetry as a way that I did not have to be silent. I was my own editor. And have been writing full-time since 2001.
Dope.
Poems.
Right. Dope.
And shit.
Yeah.
Can I say shit?
You can. Yeah. You can cuss all day.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. No, you good.
Yeah.
Yeah. I wasn't going to invite you out at 10 in the evening and have you not cuss. You know. Yeah.
You're a good dude. I appreciate you.
Jamila Woods, you're from Chicago?
Yes.
Yeah? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Maybe tell us a little about where you're from and how you started writing.
Yes. I grew up on the south side of Chicago in Beverly. Beverly gang. No one's here from Beverly. And... yeah, the Metro has stopped running.
Right.
But yeah, I started writing in high school, and I eventually found my way to an after-school program at Gallery 37, a program in Chicago, and then found my way to Young Chicago Authors and Louder Than a Bomb, and I've just been pretty much writing poetry ever since. But I think poetry became my avenue towards considering myself as a creative person, as a singer, as a songwriter. I didn't really have the confidence in my voice until I kind of found that through poetry, and then through that allowed myself to think I could do these other things that I loved.
Mm-hmm. Thank y'all. And I don't know if y'all were at the reading earlier, but it was really beautiful, and I was really moved, and I'm not often moved. I don't know. But
that's
it was
true.
Really dope.
Yeah, you normally do
I'm
not
like
express
any resting
emotions.
Bitch face forever, mm-hmm. but was not in that moment, so thank you. I think Idris touched on this a little bit about the kind of void that I think that this anthology fills. Can y'all speak to that? Whoever wants to go first.
Speak about the void.
Yeah.
I think that it's funny that there are only certain type of black women that are allowed into literary spaces. I think that it's funny that only certain degree holders are considered writers. So I was really interested in blurring those borders and showing that the black woman writer is everywhere, right? She's, yeah. as you said earlier, she's in the blue collar jobs, and she is the lawyer, or she is a mother, and she is working for the MTA. There isn't one kind of black woman that is acceptable or should be deemed fit to write. All of us are spectacular. So I was really just interested in making sure that we didn't highlight just, you know, people who went to an MFA program or people who went to a fellowship. I have all of those things, and still I come from a place where I didn't. And I remembered when people ignored me because they were like, what MFA program are you in? Oh, you're not in. Oh, well, then we shouldn't really, you know, check for you or listen to you, or your voice is invalid, until, of course, I like wrecked stage, and then they had to, right? Mm-hmm. Because I find that the best writers in my honest opinion, are people who aren't even published. They're not necessarily people who are in the pages. They are people who are on the streets, selling their books, selling chapbooks. They are people who are going into these schools, teaching your kids because someone told them to shut up so many times ago, and they understand that they have to remind folks, young people, that their voices are valid. So they aren't always offered the same access to these publishing houses, and I wanted to make sure that we had a platform that was for them too.
Hmm. Yeah. They were.
Thinking about this being like this volume two of the Breakbeat Poets anthology coming after the first one, which is really about the influence of hip hop on poetry and like the generation of writers writing under the influence of hip hop. I think sometimes you make something and then it teaches you something like that you're not expecting. And so I think what this book really has me thinking about is like how people talk about hip hop as, you know, this sort of, there's a lot of misogyny that does exist there, but also how that narrative gets used in a way against hip hop that I think it doesn't get used in other, mm-hmm. other types of music that also, you know, misogyny is everywhere. Mm-hmm. And so I think that, what I've been thinking about looking back through the book is the way that it's broadened my idea of what hip hop is, and thinking about like the tradition of quilting, you know, how black women sample different cloths to make a material that would
point their people towards freedom. Like, that's hip hop. Mm. Thinking about the way the woman who braids my hair is always looking at, you know, different braiding traditions from different cultures in Africa and doing that, like, on my head. Like, that's hip hop. And so I think that's a gift that this, working on this book, has given me, that kind of broadening of what I think hip hop is.
That's dope.
There's not a singular story of black women and our hair, or black women and our mothers, or black women and the kind of work we do, or black women in the communities that we live in, or who we love and how we love. And for a long time earlier in my writing career, I thought there was a singular story. And because I was not in what I was seeing, I felt, where do I fit in as a writer and a creative? And is there room for a story like mine? And I think this anthology underlines that there is room for every black woman's story, because there is such a range in what is expressed in these pages. And it negates this idea. It fights back against the stereotypes, the tropes, the assumptions of what it means to move in the world as a black woman.
Yeah.
Or even, sorry, utilize those tropes and those stereotypes to, like, broaden the idea, right? I love that Brittany Black Rose Capri talks about being a hoe and how we deem that, like, that type of discussion to be unfit and unladylike. And you get to decide as a woman, specifically as a black woman, decide what that means to you and be empowered by that, mm-hmm. and not allow other people to thrust upon you the idea of your sexuality and what your promiscuity is, and if you are promiscuous, what does that mean about, like, fuck the norms, right? Because we don't talk about that when we talk about men. We say that it's great. Like, you are sowing your seeds and you're figuring it out and you're so good and actualized. Mm-hmm. And you don't even fuck good if we talking honestly. Half of y'all don't even know what the fuck you doing. So when you actually love yourself enough to be like, I'm here, this is my body. And when I said it's yours, what I really meant was you're welcome. Like, I love that we are, like, breaking open the ideas that were thrusted upon us and really, like, showing you the nooks and crannies. I mean, mm-hmm. that was a lot. But
you're about,
you know.
You're about to name names, Mo? I feel like you're about to name names.
No, I'm okay. talking about how Paul.
And
I'm talking
this
about,
motherfucker can. All right,
I almost did, but I was just talking about that poem, that moment, because it is so. I don't want to say empowering, because it doesn't give me actual power, but it feels like I have permission to be everything, mm-hmm. right? Like, there isn't one way you can call me that's going to make me feel small. There is nothing about me that you can say that I haven't already said about myself and I haven't decided is okay. So I love that we are challenging our mm-hmm. ideas of what stereotypes are and who we are as women.
Yeah.
I mean, that's one of the brilliant things about this book, and there's many brilliant things about this book, but one of them is that it disrupts the singularity, the monolith about what the narrative should be. So for you all, this book, I mean, it has over 60 writers in this book. What are some of the stories that you gravitated towards? And in the editorial process, what did you want to make sure to include? And what are you really glad that you were able to include in this anthology? Or not. I mean, you know. Yeah.
I appreciated Jamila constantly pushing for, like, trans women to be in the book. We put out the net wide and far to get all types of voices, and what came back to us, we had to, like, siphon it down, right? We had to start looking at poems that did double work. Like, if you were talking about one thing, that's cool, but there's another poem talking about three of the things, including your one thing. And it's like, we really had to make sure that we made space for all of those voices, and the best way to do that. And she constantly came back to the drawing board and was like, we need more trans women here. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't matter if that person is not in our network, we need to make them in our network, right? Which really made me be like, oh, shit. Like, I know, like, maybe one or two, but I don't really push myself to involve myself in their lives in that way that I'm constantly engaged with the work. So what does that say about me as a community member? Mm. And it took it from the page to my life, and I really appreciated that.
Mm-hmm. The push for inclusion of youth voices was important to this collection and needed to be multi-generational. That was key. Mm. And pushing back against respectability politics. Like, I love that there's a piece in here about Cardi B, that, you know,
Ebony Hogan.
Yeah, that's
Ebony
a fire Hogan's piece. Yeah.
And, you know, you want to talk about Lauryn Hill as a certain exemplar for women in hip hop, but you know, you can't love me at my Lauryn and not love me at my Cardi B too, yeah. Because she is as much in the conversation. And what does it mean to include a voice that is mm-hmm. embodying and bringing her? So, mm-hmm. what the question of what drew us to particular pieces? I found myself constantly thinking about who and what is pushing back against respectability politics, pervasive narratives, filling in silences that need to be heard. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think I'll add to that too. I'm really excited that there's a rapper, at least one, maybe more than one, like who has, you know, their actual verse in the book too. Because I think that's kind of like, just something that's important. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And to have the foreword by Patricia Smith.
Yes. I mean.
Like, God body. Come on, son. Like, that really
West added. Side Chicago, also in the building.
Very, very yeah. much Chicago, yes. Yeah. Yes, you did. You did that. You did that. Well done. but she's not to have her open up and reach back
yes.
To, like, a contemporary younger poet just showed us, like, the, you know, the breadth of this work, how long-lasting it is.
Mm-hmm. And far-reaching, just, you know, our cover artwork, Brianna McCarthy, who is
a phenomenal
woman artist, does incredible work coming out of the Caribbean. Mm-hmm. So to extend that conversation beyond just the U.S. to mm-hmm. include women across the diaspora was important, too.
I have a question more for Mo. Mm-hmm. So I write about rap. I'm a journalist. And you were talking about how you felt silenced and stifled by, mm-hmm. you know, writing about or being a music journalist, writing about rap. I mean, how did, I don't know, have you revisited that or are you?
Mm. So I'm writing my memoirs because every time I say something, people are like, what the, what? We were at breakfast and I said, oh yeah, some, and you know, Diddy. And they were like, what? And I was like, oh yeah, I worked at Bad Boy for like 2 weeks. And they're like, what is happening? Who are you? And I, as much as I love hip hop, man, it was really hard to leave it because it's I don't want to say that because this is okay. How do I articulate this? It is like a family member who you love,
yeah.
who is good for you understanding who you want to be, but bad to you, mm-hmm. right? And that's what I was living in because at that time there were very few women that were running it in the back end. I got to be around Kierna Mayo and the Honey Women, which like changed my mind on how to even see myself in the world. But when it came to my edits, I had men editors. And I mean, I've been, you know, people done pulled their dick out in an interview, like had nothing to do. Like I didn't ask what your dick size was. I'm talking about your music. And it was like those moments happened so often that when I would look at my male counterparts for just like support, like, did you see this? This shit was great. They were walking out the door. So it also felt like a setup, right? Mm-hmm. And I was just like, I'm not even in a space where I feel safe enough to continue this work after I was physically threatened. And I wrote about it, and my editor was like, oh, we can't put that in because advertising dollars. So where I am now, the memories, like, I keep coming back to them because the music is really, like, moving me in a way that I keep looking back at, like, oh, I remember when Beans came through the room and Black Rob walked down the stairs in a Hamptons house singing Whoa. Like, that, I'm, whoa. It's Bennett,
yeah.
It's Whoa.
Yeah.
But it, those moments for me are like, oh, I remember who I was and who I was trying to be, and I want to come back to it, but I'm not in love in the same way. Where I am in love with the sound and the music and the rhythm is in poetry because I see a lot of poetry being informed by hip hop. And I just decided to cultivate that space over there because I have a little more, I think, authority. I've been here for 12 years running the New Eureka Poets Cafe. And everything is built off of, you know, music and family and poetry. And while I love hip hop, there's other things that are the boss of that, right? That I can't infiltrate it. I try to do my Sam Greenlee shit and be up in it and like, I'm gonna burn this from the inside out and I'm gonna make this right. But if you don't have a, if you're not a stakeholder, you really can't change as much as you think. So where I did find myself changing ideas about hip hop was in the schools. Where I saw myself changing ideas about hip hop was in my art. And if I do it from that angle, I'm always celebrating the thing I love about it without actually putting myself in harm's way.
Yeah.
Damn, you made me just reevaluate stuff.
I'm sorry.
It's cool.
But like, if you can stay, God yeah. bless it. You know what I'm saying?
No,
like, I'm lucky that I had folks that held me down after the fact. Like, Daytwan Thomas, who is EIC, editor-in-chief of Vibe, is still my people. Like, he was one of those persons I would go to, and he would say, nope, that's not right. Let's go do this, 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 this. And he had me. But, like, there's very few Daytwan Thomases. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's about finding you, like, find your tribe, find your people who got you, who have the same idea as you, and they're not just trying to get on. Because some people just trying to get on.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you've and also built your own spaces that are maybe counter spaces, but certainly feel sure. hip-hop centered in terms of the vibrancy.
Absolutely.
And some of the beauty of those cultural spaces. But you've also created a different kind of culture inside of them too.
Absolutely. I remember doing poetry in a space where they were like, hip-hop. And right. I was like, you're corny. One, when the beat drop, your ass is going to try to twerk. You know what I mean? That's one. But, like, I was raised on Too Short and Ice Cube, which is funny because, like, all of my first couple of years of poems were, like, challenging people saying bitch. And then I was like, but if I say it with my girls, I'm good. Like, you can't oppress me and say it. So, like, finding out how to articulate those things that I love about hip hop, that I love about myself, poetry helped me do that. So I don't damn hip hop. Hip hop made me. I'm aware.
Well, if we can, I'm curious because Idrisa said something in the conversation at the Poetry Foundation about the foray, the entry into hip hop. And so if you all can kind of touch on that, like your earlier moments into coming into the sonics of the culture, I guess.
My music experiences have been all over the place because of that experience of being born in Brooklyn to a Haitian American mama and a Jamaican father and raised in Vancouver, Canada during grunge and classic rock. And now living in, like, all of that has been in my influences. And it was really interesting when we moved to Canada and I was exposed to classic rock and grunge and alternative music and hearing hip-hop in all of that and the influence of it. Whether or not hip-hop was credited was one thing, but hearing those influences in the music made me see, okay, this is a conversation, and this is beyond the reach of those Brooklyn roots that I know. But for me, that entry point was really dancehall. I spoke about that tonight. I am a dancehall music head, and listening to Mo talk about her relationship with hip-hop, I feel very much the same way about dancehall music. It is deeply problematic on so many levels, but I'm like, Vibes Cartel is so ill lyrically, but why does he have to be like that? Like, and, you know, there's so many levels that make you feel like, I love what you do so much. I love and embrace your blackness, and why do I leave this experience of your music feeling so underserved and undeserved as a woman and as a black woman? So there's been that experience as well with dancehall. But my entry point to hip-hop and loving hip-hop was first through dancehall music and 90s, not just the men, Patra. Anyone know 90s Patra? Yeah, I loved Patra. Yes, do a Mo. Mo's
she
giving
had,
us a little.
Yeah, tiny shorts. I want those now.
Yes. The Bossy Riders. She had the Bossy Riders. Patra and Lady Saw were some of my early influences in the music I was listening to. And then, you know, Beanie Man, Elephant Man, Vibes Cartel. A lot of the artists, when I was coming of age and had moved to Montreal, which has a very large Caribbean community in Montreal.
Toronto, too, right?
Toronto. I mean,
yeah,
huge
giant,
in Toronto, yeah. So when I moved to Eastern Canada, I was exposed to a lot more of that. My partner, who I was with way back in those days, is a DJ, so was very deep in reggae music and culture. And then through that, you know, it was a constant conversation across the diaspora, you know, from what was happening in Jamaica, and we know those links to Kool Herc and what he brought in New York City. So it was always the two of those in conversation for me with one another, dancehall music and culture and hip hop, and you know, the love of both and finding both to be very complicated to loving them as a Black woman.
I relate to what Idrissa was saying about there was just a lot of music around me growing up. It was mostly my parents' music, which was a lot of maybe like Stevie Wonder, a lot of gospel music. They did have Erykah Badu, though, and I remember gravitating towards her. But really, I think as I progressed to even having my own music and like really heavy like alternative rock phase, like I would gravitate towards just lyricism in general. And after hearing you say that, I can think, and there's definitely like Third Eye Blind and Taking Back Sunday where they're like kind of rapping, like they think they're like not saying it, but that's what they're doing. And so, yeah, I think that's what I always gravitated towards. I remember, like, before there was, like, Genius or anything, like, I would just love to, like, hear a reference and look it up. I don't know where I would look it up, like, not Google, but somewhere I would, like, go to the library or, like, look it up, like, or ask my parents, like, what does this mean? Just liking to find out what it felt like poetry to me, like what's the layer, like what was the name of the beat that they sampled and how does that relate to the name of the new song, like that just always really fascinated me. And it wasn't until college when I learned like words like, you know, what is sampling, what is recontextualization and collage and all those things, and that's when I started to realize, oh, I can see myself within this, because before I don't think I really saw myself as being a part of it or like being it being a tool that I could use.
Yeah, I want to pick up on that idea, because I know for you, Jamila, and this is a question I have for, you know, Mo and Idrissa, you know, sampling has become a part of your craft tool belt. I'm curious what else you've maybe taken, or if you can even talk a little further about that kind of sampling you do, particularly in your songs, but also how it applies to your poetry. And I'm curious, you know, for the two of you, you know, what are some of the tools that you're also maybe garnering from either the diaspora or hip hop cultural practice, and how you see that playing into the kind of writing that you make.
With sampling, I think, contrary to what the music industry allows, like not a lot of freedom is allowed unless
you have
that paper.
Well, they've criminalized it, right? They've and they put a high price tag on people's ability to create.
Yeah, but I do see it as like adding another layer of poetry to and layers of meaning to what I'm already creating, and almost like Toni Morrison's idea of rememory, like the idea of when you stand in a place, you could imagine all the past stories and histories that exist just within that physical place. That's how I feel like when I take like a Paula Cole lyric and sing it in a song about being lonely. I think about like the drives where my dad would drive me to high school and that song would play on the radio, and I would just think about like, oh, isn't he lonely? Like, this is the only time I get to see him. He's always working, you know, like that's like another layer, that it's not important that everybody knows that, but to me that's what makes meaning for me, and some other meaning will be made for someone else. So.
And didn't she just shout you out or something like that?
She co-signed the song, y'all. She likes it.
What did she do? What did she do?
She tweeted. I didn't even know she had Twitter, but she's out here. And she said that she liked the song. Yeah.
Right. That's dope. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Idrissa?
I've been spending a lot more time with fiction lately than poetry. And storytelling is big for me. So I think about Biggie and Outkast and Slick Rick and the way they understood, like the intelligence it takes to know the moments that it makes sense to slow down and have the listener pay attention to. You know, what you're going to spend time expanding versus what gets a line, you know, versus what becomes the entire song. I think about that in the way a story is crafted and how that shows up in fiction. You know, what makes sense for my reader to pay attention to? Why this versus that am I spending time with? So I think about that a lot. And I love that you brought in Toni Morrison, because I am always thinking about ancestry and legacy and history. Those are big themes for me in my work. And I come from an entire tradition. You know, that's why we have these quotes from the Black women writers who came before us, you know, in this book, because it is their work and their legacy of evoking ancestry and connection to your heritage and where you come from. That is all up and down my work. And one of the obsessions in my work that I find myself exploring. And it might be connected to that sense of being unrooted and trying to understand, you know, going back to source and understanding from whence I come from to inform my work.
That's dope. I've always thought of Cube as a novelist and Big as a short story writer in that way. Yeah. Like there's a way to read Ready to Die that is like a book of short stories in that regard.
Yeah.
You know, so that's really dope then that you're like, I'm curious, how is that influencing then the way that you are telling a story via, you know, that lyric?
I think it's just because that music has been there for me, you know, like Ready to Die and Life After Death were big albums for me. And I agree with the point of like them feeling like anthologies. And I bring in Outkast. Aquemini is that album for me. Aquemini is the ultimate like storytelling, a story in an album for me. You know, multiple stories in an album. I kill that album to death and still do to this day. So because those influences were so much of my shaping as a young woman, I think now as I write, you know, sometimes you don't even realize where and how those influences are showing up. But you just see, oh, this is speaking to me, or this feels off and awkward. And it's because, you know, those influences just become so deep-rooted. So I'm never good at process questions because I feel like I'm still on such a journey of my process and understanding it.
But I feel like you crushed it, but
All right, I'll take that.
Yeah,
you know. I'll take that.
I'm constantly pulling from the elder writers and hip hop at the same time. So when I think of Audre Lorde, I think of Tupac, right? The fearlessness and facing the fear and being unfuckwittable. When I think of Patricia Smith, I think of Drake, just like being hella in tune with your emotions and putting that shit out there regardless of how you feel.
Yes.
Like, I'm gonna tell all your business in this section, which I think is so Drizzy. But you know, P. Smith is better, no problem.
Yeah, all day.
When I think of Nikki Giovanni, I think of Jay-Z, just, you know, the ego and the love of self, and still the, like, I don't know, the excavation of like making really ridiculous choices and being like, oh, I did that shit, but you know I was gonna get right back, like, why you go, like, where you going? So I have all of these like moments where my writers are like feeding my musical soundtrack. And even in the poem I read tonight, I had a Beanie Siegel's run, you know, when I was like, what you know about, and if you remember what you know about life, nigga, mine's this real, everything signed and sealed was all about him talking about how prison is not Club Med. When in a time where we were like applauding prison and, oh, you go to jail, that's so dope. So I know that it is constantly informing my work and it's in my blood. And I don't know what the question was because this Prosecco's really good, but hey. I hope.
Look, corner store Prosecco.
I answered it.
I want to talk about the quotes that y'all had in the book. You know, how did you pick those? And I know I spoke to Jamila.
That was funny.
Yeah. And she told me the one by Sonia Sanchez was her favorite.
Yeah, that's one of my. They're all my favorite. Okay, yeah, that one.
But you
like
particularly pointed to that one, you know. And
did we argue over any of these?
We did a little bit.
We did.
I think we did.
Yeah. We argued over that and like cover, color, typeface. Yes.
Can you all set it up and tell us like how are the chapters arranged and what we mean, what Tara means by the quotes that, you know, preface each
word.
Joint.
So the original Breakbeat Poets Volume 1 separated us by the year we were born, which was some fuck shit, because
you know that ass.
Because I had no idea when they asked me when I was born that shit was going into print.
Gonna be a blast.
Oh, damn, my God, damn.
Nate Marshall.
So you know I'm 40 again. The fuck? I can't even lie no more. Shit. So we were like, how do we not put people on Front Street? And this was our attempt at doing this.
Yes, and for us, they have like some sort of thematic guidance, but we didn't want it to prescribe that for the reader. So having the quotes shape the sections without, it was still leaving it open.
And also not prescribing it for the writers either.
Yeah.
You know, for them feeling like, that's not what I meant. Yeah. I just work. Like, and giving it, you know, a title that was a theme. Mm-hmm. The quotes give a bit more space for it to be a conversation. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And who are you quoting?
Our foremothers. Yeah, you know, the Black women writers who came before us. So there's Pat Zora Parker is in here. Yeah, Zora Neale Hurston.
Asada Shakur.
Sonia Sanchez. Toni Morrison. Mm-hmm. Edwidge Danticat.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we thought about the diaspora. So, you know, who not only having it just be Black woman based in the U.S., Pat Parker was important to me, and I think important to all of us, because she is someone whose work is often left out of the conversation, and she's been so foundational and important, even when you don't realize, you know, the ways in which you're evoking her work. So it was powerful to have her voice in there. And maybe for, you know, younger generations, or not even younger generations, just anyone who is unfamiliar with some of these women who have come before us, to be able to pick up this book released in 2018 and see these other women quoted, and then what does it mean to follow that thread and look into the work of that woman. So.
In a minute, we're going to open it up to maybe some of the other contributors if they wish to read. But can you all talk a little about the plan for the book? This is the beginning of a long march of putting this beautiful anthology into the world. What is your plan? What is the plan with the book? And what is some of the work you hope to see this book do in the world?
Frankly, at lunch, we were all talking about how scary it is to have the book out, because it is no longer yours, right? Like, we had this process, and it was never ours. It's the work of other writers who were in here. But we had this process of over 3 years. You know, we are, you know, looking at the poems coming in. We are finding the shape. We're having video conferences. Mm-hmm. We're getting together for retreats. And then all of a sudden, it's like, okay, we're looking at the galleys, and now we have a finished book, and now there's promo happening for it, and now it's out in the world, which is a very different piece of the process when you're kind of looking at the brick by brick.
And it's number one on Amazon.
Yeah.
Is the other thing. Yes. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So, I mean, you know. Just,
So we kicked off in New York with an event.
We had the Schoenberg.
Schoenberg on March 31st. Mm-hmm. We had Tonight in Chicago, May 12th. We will be in Oakland at Red Bay Coffee, to launch there. Mm-hmm. And, you know, from there, like, we want to see this in as many hands of young women as possible. That's my nieces, my North Star of, like, okay, how am I doing, is my nieces. Because Mo called it, like, nothing phases teenagers.
Teenagers, like, just like, fuck about what you're doing, about how your day is. They don't care if you think you're not cute today. And they think you're not cute always.
Right.
So, deal.
And
when
excited.
They like shit, you won.
And they like
You're
this.
The winner.
They like and this. They like so we this. Won. They like this, so we won. So I want to see this in libraries. I want to see people engaging in it. I want to see people workshopping around it. I want to see it in schools and conferences and becoming like a living body of work that is not just engaging us as editors, but all the writers who are collected in here.
And all the writers, period, right?
Yeah.
Like, there were a lot of people that we weren't able to get in this book due to time constraints, due to repeat of theme or repeat of, like, you know, the kind of voice. And we wanted to, like, I would love to have just 100 women up in this bitch. I would have loved that, but we were racing against the clock. Mm-hmm. And so some things, you know, we had to trim a couple of things, a couple of moments. So I would love to see, you know, the next iteration of this. I would love to see activation series throughout the world using this text to start those conversations and start the new edition.
Yes, I agree with all that, and maybe some playlists like to accompany the book. That would be fun.
Can we do that tonight? Like, can y'all just do that? Everybody here, we got homework. Everybody make 5 songs. What are we gonna call it? Hashtag BGM anthology playlist. That's too many characters.
BGM playlist.
BGM playlist.
BGM playlist.
BGM hashtag BGM playlist.
BGM playlist. All right, we're going to do it. 5 songs. Make it on Twitter, and we're going to make it pop like fish grease.
Word.
I'm excited. I'm hungry. I said fish grease, and I was like, Where's those chips? They're... I think I'm drunk enough now.
Cool. Well, before we invite some of the folks up to read, we want to conclude about what are you all motivated, inspired by right now? Obviously, this anthology, One Another, I imagine.
Oh, but music, because you're listening to Cardi. You know?
Right, yeah. So
I did put Cardi
What y'all listening to?
Yeah, what are y'all listening to?
Ooh. I got the new Cardi. I got the one new Drake song. And I just got introduced to Saba properly on the
right.
I had no idea. I was like, oh, he's very nice. This is great. But I felt like my grandmother. What am I listening to? I was going to Shazam it, and she's like, I can't figure it out.
He's a very nice young man.
Very nice young man.
I'm listening to Cardi, and you know, not just because she is what's hot right now, but because this is a woman in hip hop. This is a black woman in hip hop making music, and we need to support and hear what she has to say in whatever ways it is packaged and expressed. So I'm excited to be listening to Cardi. I mentioned I'm writing fiction, so I tend to listen to a music around the themes that I'm writing about. So right now, I'm listening to a lot of old school reggae and soca music. That's why I am.
I'm also listening to Saba's new album, Care For Me, hashtag Care For Me, and also still listening to the Black Panther soundtrack. Just the perspective of like Kendrick approaching storytelling in that way through an album I love.
Mm-hmm. And if we honest, we always listen to Jamila Woods up in this room. If I'm telling the truth, I wake up every day singing Holy to myself. Off beat. And still on key up in this bitch.
Never.
Cool. Just a quick scan. I know that we have a number of contributors in the room. First of all, can we make some noise for the three editors of the book one time? Can we also make some noise for all of the contributors who are in the building one time? All these incredibly fine and lovely poets who are in the building. Just a quick show of hands. How many of you all who are contributors in the book feel like you do want to kick a poem from the book out of curiosity?
One.
I see a few. Just Diamond. Just Diamond.
Two.
Okay.
Three.
Cool. All right. Mo. Yeah. Mo.
Oh. Four. Yeah. Yeah.
All right, yeah. Great. Great. Right. All right. So this is what I would love to have happen if it's okay. We're gonna treat Mo's mic like the center stage mic, and if you guys could come up and introduce yourselves and obviously say your full name and where you come from, and then kick the poem.
Same
audience, too. Are we good to hear a few poems one time?
Yeah.
All right, cool. And before we let the three of you go, can you guys let the internets know where they could find you on the on the web?
I'm Mo Brown everywhere. MOBROWNE.
Idrissa Louise, IDRISSA Louise on Facebook and Instagram.
Jamila Woods, JAMILA Woods on the Twitters.
Cool. One more time for the editors, y'all. Cool, y'all. So this is going to be a very, very special live reading. So Diamond, please take it away.
Sure. Hi, I'm Diamond Sharp, and I'm from Chicago. And this poem is for Sandra Bland and Rakia Boyd. Purgatory Room. It's me, Sandra, and Rakia in the back of the Purgatory Room. I snuck in a bag of Vintner's Crunchy Curls, and now our fingertips are covered in a dusty film of red. Rakia say she don't remember the last time she shot the shit like this. Everything is fuzzy, and her ears still ring from the buckshot. Sandra says this is the first time she's had fun in this place. Thank you.
Roya Marsh, Bronx, New York. In broad daylight, bruised black girls look goals. An erasure for Emily B. and Toni Nicole Wells. one and then the two, two and then the three and then the four. Then you gotta. Yo, when I come through, man, it's not even funny. Choke hold's too tight. Left looks too right. These bitches can't. Look, they hearts racing in the presence of the man. Your future, your past, the man, you, one and then the two, two and then the three and then the four. Then you gotta. What the world gonna say about a single mother? Same shit they say about a battered one. Question, what she do to make him go off? Answer, stay, fight, tooth and nail, call daddy. When your baby daddy forget he not your daddy. When your whole relationship been a game of dress up and the costumes come off in front the camera, in front the world. And you live long enough to be hashtagged into fault. Defense of the abusive black rapper stretches longer than Turkey Day leftovers. And you surplus crumbs from the dust of a woman and color. Black bitch, gold digger. How dare you save yourself? We told you die so we could RIP you, sis. Look at Tony, gone. From giving us life on the shade room to dead on the base room floor. And Barry gets life, but not her. Devalued, dumb, doomed. You know, I do want to see both sides. Rip entry and exit wound. Repent and reform. I wait and will and work. Till then, I got a bullet with your fame on it. One and then the two, two and then the three.
Brittany Black Rose Capri, Chicago as fuck. Open letter to mothers who shield their daughters from looking at me. No, ma'am, you wouldn't want your daughter to be like me. I sucked dick this morning and didn't brush my teeth. And yes, my hat, necklace, septum ring all say bitch. And I used to burn myself and lie about it. And I've forgotten how many men have forgotten my name, but not what I look like bent over. And I curse like a pirate, fucked a veteran, fucked a barkeep, fucked my mom and had me. And I got tattoos in places you didn't even know you could get them. And I touch women in places you warn your daughter to not let boys near. I pierce some of those places too. Sometimes I stand naked in my kitchen and sleep with men in relationships, but not married ones. That's too much drama. And I feed off of drama like my uncle in a bottle. And I do drugs, not pot. I smoke that too. And I steal from Target. I'm a feminist and I watch punishment porn. And instead of a list of respectable shit I do, all I say is, I respect my elders. See, I called you ma'am when I could have called you bitch.
That's that new shit.
Love her. This is a pantoum. Hey. Shout out to you.
Who you be?
Oh, hello. I'm Rach Jackson. I'm a Gemini. this is a pantoum. Pantoum from the bully. When I was a bully, everyone commented on how smooth my hands were. No one believed in my invaluable skill. Rip out the worthless sprout with ease. Everyone commented on how smooth my hands were. Smear her all over the table and repeat my work. Rip out any worthless sprout with ease. See how I can hurt people too? Smear her all over the table and repeat my work. I found you a new target. See how I can hurt people too? It takes too much time to try to crush the already tiny shards. I found you a new target. This one hasn't been broken yet. It takes too much time to try to crush the already tiny shards. I've learned I'm better when I'm next to you. This one hasn't been broken yet. No one believed in my invaluable skill. I've learned I am better when I am next to you. When I was a bully.
Iman Loren, South and West Side of Chicago, L-Town, and Inglewood, fucking meme. Yeah. Okay, I'm in a lift with all white men, a pool, cause bitches is poor, and I'm high as fuck off of acid. Okay, so they thinking that they finna pick up a black dude. Okay, it's me. Bitch, I am off the fucking acid. I'm thinking that they don't wanna know what's going on in my head. I'm bumping Rihanna. Thinking if she's turned her creeps into platforms for a reason. Thinking if my baby daddy is soapbox enough. So my baby daddy got two pairs of shoes at the crib. Nikes, inbox, not FOBs, but inbox condition. My baby daddy and his brother, my ex-roommate, got into a huge fist fight again, I guess, on some that bullshit. So my baby daddy ain't there no more, but his shoes were, his kind of nice shoes. I took the shoes and brought them to my crib. I said I might sell them at St. Alfred, hold them as a stock portfolio for my future brokenness. I said I will take them and watch them be stacked against my wall like I was so many times with his ass for my baby. So I said, I will take these shoes, let them be a reason for why he has to see me again. I said that feel a little bad for my baby daddy, but that's only because he's my baby daddy. And putting anything past that would be adding unnecessarily judgment to myself. So I say, fuck it. That nigga deserves it. Least I can get from his ass is Huaraches and velvet Nikes.
Kemi Alibi, born and raised in Wisconsin, living in Chicago. Soft and beautiful, just for me, relaxer, no lie conditioning cream, children's regular. Directions. Snatch the could-be girl, except she too dark, except them nigga naps, child by the braids. Slice them open, rake the comb through, cue the scalp pop, the scab-robed choir. Teach the tribe dirge, staccato rip-rip, crescendo into sizzle and shred. Litter the neck with butchered kinks, a gutter fur shawl, diseased offering. Heat stroke, swamp drown, chemical spill, decompose, exercise, drag and prop until Brillo collapses, satin rises, arabesques and curtsies with a snap. Heaven's darkest halo is a high yellow. On earth, at last, a crown is cast in black. Ingredients, propylene glycol, antifreeze. These winters, nothing natural survives. Helianthus anise, sunflower, half the native wildlife extinct. Hydroethyl cellulose, KY jelly, the rest tweaked to triple their bloom. Citronello, repellent, teach her to burn. Salvial officinalis, sage, all smoke, no fire. Aqua, water, refuse to call God by name. Warning, a child is made of water, a black girl, open flame. Product may catch fire. Oshun may wrestle from her kitchen, snap your comb in two. There may be no black girls, only burning gods. There may be no Jesus, just empire. You may be both the army and the scorched earth below. Directions. What was the Atlantic before it became a graveyard? Before crops meant auction blocks, which dance brought the rain? For best results, cover her, fall in praise, be cloud thick and unpartable, be tangled sky stuck waves.
I think we got one more poem for y'all. Make some noise for the last poem.
Hi, I'm Ajnay Dawkins from Michigan and New York. This poem is called Airs. One, I'm looking at my mom Pearl's frayed Polaroid, and it comes to life. My great-great-grandmother's soft bones adjust next to mine on the couch. A ghost materializes, and you'd think the fear would make the blood clot a moment, but no. You know, the spirit, it ain't got a gender or race, but in this form, her body white passing still. Her body looked like all my theories, all my thesis. Her body looked like my trauma, but not regardless. She my blood, so she looked like pound cake. The Polaroid ain't do her boldness beauty enough. In the photo, she's gone now, but the land given to her by her white father is still there. the kind of gift that'll seal a wandering mouth, too. Mom Pearl, I could tell you the signs of this grief and how it's passed down. How children of traumatized mothers are born with lower amounts of cortisol, making them more susceptible to trauma. Mom Pearl, they said you here because of your mama and a slave owner's son. And they said it like a fruit hanging in the garden, like a sweet love in the barn haystack at dusk where your mama and this man ate an apple to the core. And if that's that, then that's what it was. But I think lust and rumors ain't have much to do with it at all. And did you know that gnats are born with additional head protection when their mothers are threatened by other species? That is to say that the bathroom mirror is an endless Atlantic I work through my soft hair end. And I'm wondering if when I comb through, I should mull over a soft secret that loosens the curl or violence. And children of Holocaust survivors have symptoms of PTSD related to the Holocaust, even though they never experienced it. And that is to say that I'm writing the family history, but all I got is Polaroids and journals and your grave. And you know, Mom Pearl, that all research is just discourse with ghosts anyways. And I'm just trying to ask how far in our blood trauma dates, and if one of us was once held tender by a lover who just couldn't say our name aloud, or if this could be where the curse began. And that's not to say you a curse, but all these girls born bleeding, they got to come from somewhere, and you would be proud that I ain't dead yet with how many pints done spilled from an opening I can't name the source of. But anyways, this is about your conception, and you ain't never asked about this. Your conception, it got smog in its chest and over its face. Your conception, a nameless dark I walk through, looking for the source of my own wound. 3, the ghost says back, grief is born of trauma. You here 'cause of your mama and a hanging. Your mama is the core, and that was love. You born with additional protection. My soft hair, a secret the children have symptoms of. I'm the history, but you, your mom, and I, our blood held tender by this curse. And you girls come from somewhere I open my own wound. Thank you.
Yo, so I'll tell you how real and how fire it is right now. The editor's in the corner like, no, motherfucker, we coming back. You know what I mean? Make some noise for everyone who's read, and make some noise again for the editors of Black Girl Magic.
This is not that long. I'm just going to read it for my mother, Bernadette, who is my favorite person on this earth and who is always heavy on my mind. So, on the line with my dying mother, I choose words that land soft as fingers in the sweet of her scalp. Some time ago, I became her patron saint of hope and faith, a calm weft of voice she ascends. Her voice, thick with East New York, then mine, then hers again. We call and respond, our voices moving like smoke between open mouths. I was not holy before. I have never been a light to anyone, especially not my mother, pretty brown woman whose body contained mine, gave me my sheen, my breath of champagne and bacon fat, my taste for malt and sugar donuts, my love of a well-painted face and clean brows. I have been the worm inching through soil, not the butterfly. We are women bad things happen to. We knot our headscarves and angle our knees around thoughts of miracles that will not happen. The things we desire burn us, crown our heads with scorn. What I want is time. to resurrect all the days I have buried, to crawl back from the old woman already keeping company inside me. We pray over the line. My eyes are wide open. I lay across an unmade bed, dawn light through the window segmenting my flesh. This is our audacity, to pray for a stunning exit, for the brittle body to rearrange itself like a floor-length skirt, to dance and dance before death.
And I really wanted to read Black Girl Magic, but I feel like we're doing new shit because it's 30-30. It's March. You write poems every day for 30 days. Shit is bananas. And so I'm going to read some new shit that I just finished writing. Warning. This smile is a poem too, and full of knowing in its weary. How the chaos is guided as emotional healing, how the healing feel more like heel to neck. And this smile stay put, bright like its own planet or a moon full on its own magic, and the magic calls all the goons to the yard like last night. This smile was on a trillion because Cardi B released an album. It ain't no shine like the call to arms for a woman warrior. Like last night, Drake reminded me that I don't have to be nice. Like I need a man reminding me of my things, but the drum knocks. And I feel like I am my most shiniest of selves when I have no bills or eulogies to bother my blood. And I feel like my purest self stomping in the dance floor in Justin's on 23rd or Jeffrey's in the Bay, and the room is mine as I whine and I am mine as I go, go, oh, check the moon in me. It is skyline high and my smile matched the beat. Until a man decides my wing flanked to my hip bone is his to grab, so he do. Like the time when Darius locked us down in the basement apartment on Helen Street, all the boys sitting outside the bedroom door giggling, the air a certain kind of heat, the kind that stick to the enamel of your teeth, how it wafted around the room like an old wife waiting for her husband to return home after a card game or a dirty bar over on Telegraph. My neck tightened with all the words I was taught to say, and so I said nothing. This is when I learned to smile. I smile like I like pain, because I know it's the only thing coming for me. When I learn to love what I know will hurt me. What a smile but a cleaver. What's a smile but a cleaver looking for a hollow tomb? And now, the world between these walls watch a man handle a woman like it's nothing out of order, and the beat don't lose its ability to seduce me. But my buzz is clicking ghost-like a broken spoke, and my smile don't waver. It's like I've become too good at snatching back what is mine's.
This one is from the book. It's inspired by a Hebrew Brantley painting called Sport and Waves. If you don't know what waves are, you should look it up. Google it. Black boy oceanic, a baby boar bristle brush in your back pocket. Some might confuse it for a weapon, but you use it to turn solid to liquid. When you pull out your boar bristle brush, bullets turn to heavy rain. When you rub your boar bristle brush across a cop's pale nose, he melts into a puddle of blue. You step out the barber's chair with 360-degree waves. You wear the Atlantic like a crown. All our ancient bones brush smooth. All day, you tend the waters, reach for a brush for a quick touch-up in the tinted window of a car, tie it up in black silk for safekeeping, the way God wraps his waves in the night sky. Each morning, you rewrite history on your scalp. In your version, no one drowns. Yeah.
Is for every single writer who graced the microphone. Let us again salute the three editors of the Black Girl Magic Anthology. Black Girl Magic is out. It is number one on Amazon. Mo is a fan of Vintner's Crunchy Curls. I also want to say Haymarket Books is a place to find the book. Support independent publishers. It is also half off on the website for the month of April. So it is cheaper there than anywhere else. Tara Mahadevan.
Thank y'all for coming.
Yeah, that's a good one. Thank
you
to the Ace Hotel.
So last minute.
I know.
Yeah.
Thank you to Claire. Thank you to the Ace Hotel staff. Thank you to our incredible live audience. Give yourselves a round of applause for being in the building. Hey, thank you, DJ Exhibit, for the beat.
Langston Olsen for the logo and art.
Big up WGN Radio. Shout out to our super producer, DJ Cash Era.
And boss man, Todd Manley.
Thank you, Dami.
And Marlena, the snack provider.
Shout out, Rena, the official photog in the corner store.
Stay up with us, Shy Corner Store, on Instagram, Twitter, and SoundCloud.
And please, y'all, please rate and subscribe on iTunes, Apple Music, SoundCloud, and wherever you listen to a podcast. Consider giving us those 5 stars.
And tell a friend.
And thank you for listening and rocking with us. We'll see you next week.